and it was 8:01. I did not want Riordan in my flat. He'd have more time to look around, copy something else. "Please be here when I get back," I told Shazam. "I miss our cuddles." His smile was instant, enormous, and swallowed his head, all fangs and thin black lips, and there was that elusive nagging reminder of something I couldn't place again. Shazam smiling made me think of something else, something I'd once seen but apparently hadn't considered important enough to file away with a neat label.
"Me too."
He bounded off the counter, stalked to the mattress, turned around three brisk times, and plopped heavily to the bed.
"Can we put the mattress back up high soon? I like it there."
"Soon as I get back." "I see you, Shazmataz."
"I see you too, Yee-Yee."
I tugged on opera-length black silk gloves, studded with diamonds, which ended where my sleeves began, grabbed my sword, slid it across my back, tucked three blades in a thigh sheath, and stalked out the door. 20. You drive me crazy like no one else. I went slowly down four flights of stairs. Not because of my heels, but because I was abruptly off kilter the moment I closed the door of Sanctuary and locked it behind me. Riordan was picking me up. I was wearing a dress. I had no bloody idea where we were going or what we were doing. Out of control on all counts. For 2 long years I'd been mistress of the empty megapod, dominatrix of every detail. There'd been no surprises. I'd not once lost hold on my emotions. Not even when I killed Bridget. I hadn't slumped into a puddle of grief and self-abasement, and I'd wanted to. That'd been one of my tougher things to box. I'd killed yet another innocent. But no matter what happened, I went on, steady and committed, doing what needed to be done, being what people needed me to be. And I dealt with however it fractured me. I was proud of myself for that. I considered it a sign of my maturity. Yet a few thoughts about him on the way to his club had whipped me into a frenzy of uncontrolled emotion, and I'd become a tornado, whirling dizzyingly about, dizzying even to me. I stopped, centered myself with a breathing kata, and, only when I was composed, did I resume descending. I wasn't about to repeat my earlier volatility. If he brought up the kiss, I'd shrug it off as PMS. Men use it against us all the time. If that didn't shut him up, I'd employ the hangry excuse. He knows how often I need to eat to function at peak performance, has seen me shaky and feverish. I rounded the final stairwell, expecting to find him parked outside in the Hummer. He was waiting at the bottom of the stairs, hand on the newel post, looking up. Looking incredible. Tall, dark, and the precise flavor of the danger I find so addictive. Standing there like we were going on a date or something. I was instantly assaulted by conflicting emotions. I'd dreamed of seeing him standing there. Somewhere, anywhere, in my world again. And I was so damned angry, I couldn't process the complexity of it. I'm smart enough to know I can also be as emotionally myopic as Mr. Magoo is nearsighted. The more something matters to me, the less I understand how I feel about it. Mac used to help me with that. For the 100th time, I wished she were here to talk to. I missed her so much. "You could have waited in the car," I said tonelessly.
"I bloody well know what I can and can't do, and don't pull Jada voice on me. I came to see Danny tonight."
Riordan is beautiful. Not like Barron's, who's beautiful in a perfectly imperfect way. Far more animalistic than man. You see the beast first in Barron's. You have to hunt for it in Riordan, who pours a flawlessly human skin over his animal form, meticulously aware of precisely where each atom of his being is in relation to the world around him. He has a heightened, absolute awareness I covet and emulate. He's liquid grace when he moves, I'm damned close to it. I've admired him since the day I met him. Used to study him when he wasn't watching me. I once spent 8 infernal hours trapped in his office, watching his dark head bent over paperwork, absorbing every detail of his profile, trying to figure out some way to shatter that infernal calm and grace, make that controlled face explode into uncontrolled emotion, make him act like I always felt around him. It hadn't eluded me that the first man to draw my gaze after Dancer died, at 6 feet 4 inches and 240 pounds with short dark hair, resembled Riordan. There are two types of men I'm attracted to, and they're rare as hell. Brilliant, sexy, full of wonder, pure as wide open sky and easy to be around. Or brilliant, sexy, inhumanly strong, carved by ruthless experience and difficult to handle. I like extremes. Riordan was dark and elegant. His powerful body poured into a charcoal Versace suit, a subtly embossed white shirt, a silver and black tie that matched his eyes, wide cuff glinting at his wrist, the tips of intricate tattoos peeking above his crisp white collar, dark Italian shoes. He was as dichotomous as his club. Sophistication on the surface, primal beast beneath. His jaw was dusted with dark stubble. And, I inhaled lightly, he smelled good. I didn't remember him smelling so good. The wan light of the single bulb illuminating the foyer behind him shadowed the regal bone structure of his face. Primordial, polished, pain-in-the-ass man that never fails to rattle me. Or make me feel painfully alive. I want him. He drives me batshit crazy. He held my gaze a long moment.
Beautiful by any standards, in any century, on any world, woman.
His eyes said. I willed my eyes blank. Emerald shallows lapping gently at a shore. Not a tsunami out of control. As I began to descend the last flight, he said,
What did you miss the most about me, Danny?
Aside from that dark velvet, exotically accented voice, his clear, unfiltered way of seeing me, his ability to kick my brain up into a higher gear, his endless challenges, and how he always seemed to understand what I was feeling, even when I didn't. Clever. I said coolly. Most implies that I missed many things. I didn't think about you at all.
You need to stop boxing the things that disturb you.
I narrowed my eyes. How I organize my brain is none of your business.
It is when I'm the recipient of the resultant chaos.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
When you refuse to think about an issue, it remains unchanged. In precisely the same state as you tucked it away.
Precisely the point of boxing it. The issue dies, can no longer affect you. It's a damned effective tactic.
Short term, yes. Long term, a recipe for disaster. When you next encounter whatever you boxed your feelings about, you're ambushed by repressed, unresolved emotion.
Your point eludes me, I said stiffly. It didn't, I just didn't like it. No one ever called me on my shit. I'd gotten used to that. I'd missed that about him. Even as I resented his logic for being so bloody logical.
If you'd thought about me while I was away, you wouldn't have been a perfect storm of oppositional desires at Chester's this morning.
Truth. Wasn't about to admit it. It had nothing to do with you. I was PMS. And hungry. He smiled faintly.
I see. So that's how we're going to play it. Commando or thong?
My face screwed into an instant scowl. What? He laughed.
Ah, Danny. That's one of the many things I missed about you. When your eyes flash, your skin flushes, and you're even more fucking beautiful. I used to picture your face while I was gone. When you were on one of your rants, stalking, fierce and high-tempered, I missed it. Tell me something you missed about me. I must have slipped out of your box every now and then.
I gave him a stony look, He'd pictured my face while he was gone. Then why hadn't he called? I wasn't a woman to be softened with a few nice words after 2 bloody endless years of silence. 2 years in which he'd showed me precisely how little I meant to him. As I neared the bottom of the staircase, he said,
"We need a few rules."
I don't do rules. Not true. I had an elaborate set of my own. And certainly not yours.
Ours,
he corrected.
Mutually agreed upon. Rule number 6.
What are rules 1 through 5? Do I get to make those up? I had a list ready.
We'll get to those. I was merely making the point that this particular rule isn't the most important between us. The next time...
And, of course, you're the one who gets to decide what's most important.
You want to blow off steam, say the word. I've got a fully outfitted sparring gym at Chester's.
Level 7, boxing ring, every weapon imaginable. I exploded all your punching bags. I took your guns, too. Oh, and those cool studded leather gloves with the recessed blades.
Where we can glove up and spar, you little snoop, in private.
I was getting mad again. He sees right through me. He was right, and that pissed me off even more. Putting him in a mental compartment had indeed left me unprepared for his return. He was here now, but I was still stuck 2 years ago, in a cemetery, hurt and angry, with 2 years of additional hurt and anger heaped on top of it. I needed to address that quickly, and physical activity always helps me think. Fine, let's go now.
And forego a night with you in that dress? Not a chance. We'll have our date first.
People like you and me, and I use that term loosely in reference to you, don't date. And rule, definition, something you don't break, and certainly not the first time out of the gate. Clearly no one but you gets to invoke the rules. Typical. You're always the only one allowed to make the decisions.
Ah, and now we're finally getting to your point,
he murmured. I descended the final step. No, we're not. And it's commando. Friction's a bit when I freeze frame. Nothing under here but skin, babe. His laughter was soft, husky and dangerous.
Battle engaged, babe.
Raw current arced between us as I swept past him. I channeled that energy into a powerful, long-legged stride outside, feeling his gaze scorch my ass all the way to the car. And that pissed me off, too. Not that he was staring at my ass. He should be. It looked terrific. The car. It was a matte black Ferrari. Sleek. Sexy. Date material. What's wrong with the Hummer? I demanded.
You'd look like one of those women ascending the ladder at Chester's trying to climb in it.
He had a point. My hands aren't broken, I said when he beat me to the car in that inhuman glide of his and opened the door for me.
Ah, for fuck's sake, Danny, enjoy the night. It's a beautiful one. The sky's velvet, clear. Look at all those bloody stars.
His words were soft, modulated as ever, but he slammed the door before stalking to the driver's side. I smiled faintly as I tipped my face up and glanced through the windshield at a cobalt sky. Not a rain cloud in sight, not a wisp of fog. Just stars glittering like diamonds on dark velvet. I'd gotten a slam out of him. A stalk. Tension ratcheting up in his body as he passed through the headlights. Life was good. When he slid behind the wheel and started the car, the deep, sexy purr of the engine was drowned out by a sudden blast of ear-shattering music, especially to someone who hears as well as me. The bass was so loud, it nearly vibrated me out of the seat. I knew that song. I loved that song. I'd danced to it. A lot. I flushed. Heart. The line currently blasting. I cast my spell of love on you, a woman from a child. Magic man. I scowled thunderously, fisting my hands. Riordan and his damned spells. Was that what he'd done to me? Was that why I was always so bloody confused around him? Because I didn't really love him. He just made me think I did. I frowned. Wait, what? I was so not looking at him right now. I stared straight ahead.
I like it loud,
he said, as he turned the volume down.
One of my favorite songs.
He was not allowed to have that as one of his favorite songs. It was mine. Still staring straight ahead, I gritted, How constantly did that caveman of yours watch me?
Why?
Teeth clenched, I spat. Magic man. I dance to it, a lot. Like naked, in front of a wall of windows. Up high where you don't expect people or non-people to be lurking about on rooftops, spying on you without your knowledge or consent. How constantly? Riordan was silent a long moment. Then tightly,
That fuck said nothing about you dancing.
I glanced at him. The words had come out guttural, thick, fangs fully distended. He was the one staring straight ahead now, hands so tight on the wheel his knuckles were white. After a long moment, he rasped,
Lore wouldn't have stayed to watch.
You can't know that.
I can. He may have seen you begin, but I assure you he didn't stay.
I narrowed my eyes, studying him. He was employing one of my tactics, relaxing his fingers one at a time, modifying his breath, forcing himself to regain control, fangs slowly retracting. Copycat. What makes you so sure?
We may walk like humans, but we are far more beast than man.
Your point. He didn't say anything for so long, I was on the verge of writing it off as one more question the great Riordan would never deign to answer.
Sex is the beast's greatest hunger,
he said finally.
More so than blood. More even than war. It is its greatest obsession, and also the thing capable of affecting it the most deeply.
Level 4. Sex for breakfast. He inclined his head.
Had Lore stayed to watch, his beast would have taken control.
So what? I wouldn't have done anything with him.
Consent wouldn't have mattered. You're not as powerful as he is, as we are.
I bristled at the reminder. I was acutely aware of it, every bloody moment of every bloody day. You're telling me Lore, my Lore, who is always good to me, would have... I broke off. I'd have used his own club against him. Lore and me, we don't feel that way about each other.
Lore is beast first. We all are. Never forget that. Never underestimate it. We have our limits. We do what we must to manage those limits and minimize fallout. With the exception of barons, none of us permit the beast to run wild. It does things we don't want it to do, with deadly consequences. Ergo, the moment you begin to disrobe, Lore would have left. He cherishes you, protects you, calls you his little honey.
Are you telling me the 9 can't see a woman naked without turning into a beast and assaulting them? That's lame. What kind of superhero has that kind of problem? He made a sound of choked laughter.
Danny, only you would call us lame. Superheroes constantly battle an inner darkness, a hunger to cast off all chains. It took Christian Bale to give us an authentic Batman. It was about bloody time the world pulled its head out of its ass and gave us a gritty, complicated version of the Bat, who could champion the things that mattered. Not the bloody use of seatbelts, doing your homework, and eating your fucking vegetables. Champions don't spring from happy childhoods. They explode from tortured ones with a mile-wide dark streak they've learned to use for good. Superheroes aren't perfect, and they're usually their own worst enemy. Yes, we can see women naked. It takes the addition of an extreme on top of it to cut the beast loose.
I blinked, trying to wrap my head around his Batman insight. It wasn't half bad. I itched to debate it, dissect details. Did he or didn't he read comics? Extreme, my ass. I wasn't doing anything sexual, I was just dancing.
You are an extreme, and I've seen you dance. It's sexual, blatantly, graphically. A red fucking flag to a bull. Heed the warning. Never dance naked in front of me, unless you intend to see it through. All the way. And it's a long, lawless way.
I wasn't planning to, I snapped. I'm entirely too visual sometimes. I had a vivid picture in my head of doing just that. Had, in fact, imagined doing precisely that while dancing to Magic Man in my flat over the past 2 years. Stunning him, dazzling him, making him lose control and vow his undying love of me. Indulged in yearnings I'd carefully boxed the moment I stalked, exhausted from my living room floor. That was how I'd learned to vent things when sex with human men hadn't worked. Dumped my pains, my dreams, on a private dance floor, instead of in bed with a stranger. Lived out my wildest fantasies, naked and alone. Same way I lived my life. I still found it highly suspicious that he'd been listening to my song, and told him so.
For fuck's sake, Danny, it's not your song. I like Heart. They're two dynamic, sexy women.
My eyebrows climbed my forehead. You know Heart? You've met them?
They used to come into the club sometimes, back in the day. Who do you think Magic Man is about?
I gaped. No way! Your eyes are silver.
Lore.
His eyes are green, not blue. And I read a Rolling Stone interview that said it was about Mike Fisher.
Protecting Lore's identity.
She's a brunette.
Occasionally he breaks his own rule. Anne Wilson was a woman worth breaking it for. He had a thing with Joan Jett for a while, too.
Seriously, Magic Man is about Lore? With a hint of irritation, he said.
According to him, yes. He says Crazy on You is too. He was hard to live with for a while. That was back when he was hanging out with the Kinks.
Holy Hall of Fame! Lore was immortalized in classic rock and roll! I couldn't keep the note of envy from my voice. Okay, envy liberally dripped from each word. But criminy, what a tribute! I mean, sure, it was only about how good he was in bed, but music lived forever. Raiden laughed softly.
Ah, Stardust. I've no doubt you'll be immortalized in far more important ways.
I stiffened. Why did you call me that? That was what my mam used to call me, a lifetime ago, during the hot minute she'd loved me.
Seems fitting. Tell me the state of the world in a nutshell.
He'd done it again, changed the subject so quickly I floundered a moment, trying to shift gears. I'm sure Lore updated you, I said tightly. He'd left for 2 years, and I'd known nothing about him at all, but he'd been getting constant updates about me.
I knew nothing of your life either. He was left in play to keep you alive, nothing more. And although he updated me when I got back, his mind isn't yours. I want the mega-brain analysis.
I beamed. Since he put it that way. We're poised on the brink of our greatest war yet. If Mac fails to gain the Fey Court's loyalty, if they succeed in killing her, and they don't need the sword to do that, locking her away in the Unseelie prison would eventually kill her too. Once they seize her power, they'll either eradicate us from the face of this planet, or enslave us. If they've locked her in the Unseelie prison, as Cruz did to Aviel, every moment we waste could be ushering her one step closer to death. That was a fear that kept me awake at night. Mac in trouble. Needing me. And out of blind respect for her wishes, I was doing nothing. 2 years of silence had turned into an endless, gnawing worry in the pit of my stomach.
You've not heard from Mac at all?
He sounded stunned. Not a word since you left. He cursed softly.
Christ. She said she'd stay in touch. What about Rainey? I know you see her. Has she heard from her daughter?
I stopped asking her nearly a year ago. It upset her. I suspect if she'd heard, she'd have told me.
Any theories on where the bookstore went?
I offered 5. Mac and Barons moved it for some reason. Someone else took it. The silvers inside were changed by the song and swallowed it up into a fey realm. An IFP devoured it and moved on. I couldn't resist adding a Douglas Adams theory. It got fundamentally fed up with being where it was.
The long, dark tea time of the soul.
I loved that book.
The airport that blew up.
I nodded. cried and read books. The kind I liked.
I think we can rule that one out.
I'm okay with that. Suddenly, it felt like old times. Light banter, easy camaraderie. Examine the scene tomorrow, Robin, I said lightly. He caught me a look.
As if I'd wear that suit, Sherlock. BBC version.
My eyes narrowed. I am so not Watson.
I'd peg you more as that woman.
I nearly preened. That woman was badass, sexy and lethal, and one of the few to ever give the epic detective a run for his money. She'd stormed into conflict with the penultimate deductive brain wearing the most daring and formidable battle dress of all. Nudity. From which he'd been able to draw not a single clue about her person or intentions. My near preen turned into a scowl as I considered the rest of her story. No way! Sherlock broke her code. You be that woman.
Sherlock broke her code because she refused to admit that she wanted him. If she'd been honest about it, if she'd acted on it, there'd have been a different code, one he might not have been able to break. Instead of Sherlocked, it would have been wisely nonsensical and undecipherable.
That he had a valid point pissed me off even more. Your point is that if she fucked him, she might have been thinking more clearly. Do you know how insulting that is?
If the shoe fits.
Implying not fucking you makes me stupid.
Not quite what I was saying,
he said dryly. You do not in any way affect or dilute a single cell of my magnificent brain.
Merely observing that we deny at our own peril that which we desire.
His words were eerily similar to what Shazam had said before I'd left the flat. I am not that woman.
Hit a nerve, did I?
And if I was, I'm bloody well entitled to be. Sherlock wouldn't even return a single one of her bloody texts. Not one. And the alert tone she'd programmed into his phone for her texts should have melted him, at least from the waist down.
Am I missing something? Did you text me?
I was not ready for this argument. Your timing sucks.
Time has always been the problem with us.
Am I missing something? I mocked. Did you text me? I'm not the one that left. The person that leaves bears the onus, period. God. I sounded just like Dancer, when I'd finally come back from the White Mansion with Christian. I thought, my love, I'm sorry, I get it now. I get it in spades.
I'm not the one that never called. You had a phone. You didn't call once. You were just out there having...
He terminated the sentence abruptly. What? What was I having that you want to throw in my face? Because I wasn't having much of a good time, I can tell you that.
Define good time.
Fuck you, Riordan. And here we were again. I don't think I ever once said those words to Dancer. I never felt the need.
There's no reason not to. I'm here, you're here. We both want to.
I gaped at him. Christ, he'd just put it baldly on the table.
You think I won't put it baldly on the table?
I said with acid sweetness. I rather thought you'd try to put it on a desk. Isn't that where you usually put it? He flinched, imperceptibly. And I regretted the words instantly. Joe. As if summoned from a grave, her ghost was there, standing between us. I could almost see her shaking her head with sorrow, telling me Riordan was a good man, and I wasn't seeing him clearly. Her gravestone loomed in the air, a solid concrete wall separating me from him. The heat of innuendo died, and his gaze shuddered.
Mac carried that one hard,
he said.
I suppose I carry it too.
I gaped again. It seemed like all I was doing tonight. Mac ate Joe, I practically shouted.
When she was possessed by the Shisadu.
I ached for her, understanding too well the pain she carried. Bridget, all the others, my ghosts for the rest of my life. Why the bloody hell did no one tell me? Why am I always the last to know things?
I'm doing everything in my power to make sure you're not,
he clipped, driving his point home. Riordan wanted me, and he wasn't going to conceal that fact. What did he think? That he could just stroll back when I was grown up, have sex with me, then one day saunter up and tell me he was leaving again? When you fuck a man, I said with quiet venom, you're giving him a motherfucking gift. He went motionless, waiting. When I didn't continue, he goaded, eyes glittering.
Come on, Danny, say it. You know you want to. You're dying to. Fling that fucking gauntlet at me.
You don't deserve me, I said with icy satisfaction. He smiled with some unfathomable feral light in his eyes. The bastard actually smiled. Who does that when you insult them? Then he completely changed the subject.
No one told you because you had a great deal on your plate at the time.
He didn't say a word about Dancer, but he didn't have to because instantly another ghost popped into filmy existence between us. Dancer. Joe. Fog tendrils curling about their transparent, forever lost to us bodies. So much loss. I wasn't in the mood for any more. I'm all about the things that stay. My city, my people who need me, Shazam, Kat, Enyo. The ones who don't go tearing off on lengthy walkabouts without you, without a word of explanation. I pulled a Riordan and completely changed the subject. Have you heard from Barons? He didn't say anything for a long moment, and I was perversely pleased to see him having as hard a time shifting gears as I'd been having. Then...
Not a word in 2 bloody years. I have no fucking idea where he is.
I looked at him stunned. He'd been as cut off from news of them as me. He didn't know where Barons was. I had imagined Riordan sitting somewhere, receiving constant updates from everyone. In control as always, monitoring the world. Where the hell had he been?
What else, Danny?
The old gods are back. No idea how many or who. Humans are abducting adults, paralyzing them and taking them through mirrors to an unknown location for reasons unknown. He'd said nutshell version, so I was keeping it brief.
While you save the children left behind,
he murmured.
Getting them settled into new homes. Lore told me that part.
Where was Lore watching me from when Oz and Jane tried to take my sword?
Across the street. He couldn't hear a bloody word of the conversation. Fill me in.
I gave him the highlights, omitting the wish part, because that was my business, not his, and I was still trying to figure out which wish Oz had decided to grant that hadn't yet bit me in the ass.
Rumor is, Jane's being hunted.
Riordan told me when I'd finished.
The Fae put a steep bounty on his head. He hadn't been seen in a long time until he showed up in your flat. Some say he's gone into deep hiding with his mortal family, trying to protect them. Perhaps he wanted your sword for Mac, perhaps for himself.
What does Lore say about the Fae? Despite his claim that he wasn't getting laid, I had no doubt he'd been at Illyrium, unable to resist a party or seducing blondes with his lethally effective caveman charm. Riordan caught me a dark look.
Mac gave us the same mandate she gave you. No interference. We obeyed. He's not been inside Illyrium, and from what he says, the Fae don't come out.
The Nine obeyed Mac? I said incredulously.
Barons. Motherfucking shield.
I laughed softly. Oh, how that must chafe.
Which is why,
he said as we finally pulled away from the curb and began to drive through Dublin.
2 years later, we don't know a single thing about our enemy. According to lore, those humans that enter the club are tampered with. He interrogated a few, said they come out either unwilling or unable to discuss anything they've seen. Her mandate should have come with an expiration date. It didn't. Now that the bookstore is missing, along with Mac and Barons, were enforcing an expiration date. Tonight.
Surely he didn't mean... Where are you taking me? He flashed me a wolf smile, all teeth and hunger.
Illyrium.
Yes. Adrenaline cold-cocked my heart. This wasn't a date. It was a mission. I'd been aching to do this for a small eternity. Dying to stalk into their club and rattle their world. Let those bastards know we were watching and waiting and it wasn't over. You do realize I'm carrying the sword they all want.
Bloody hell, yes I do,
he said with unconcealed relish. We drove in silence for a time, and he turned the music back up, right as Miley Cyrus was singing, Don't You Ever Say, I Just Walked Away, I Will Always Want You. Wrecking ball. I often felt like one. His taste in music was starting to freak me out. I wanted to know if we were listening to the small local volunteer-run station or an iPod he'd loaded with personal choices. I wanted to know if he was, like, sending me subliminal messages. He had just walked away. Period. End of subject. No song lyrics could change that. There was no commercial interruption when the song ended, but that wasn't a tell. Nobody advertises anymore. I keep waiting for some kind of underground renegade radio station to pop up that offers both music and biting social commentary, but none has. I'd start one myself if I had more time, but I no longer get to do a lot of the things I'd like to do. I have astounding taste in music. It runs the gamut all over the place, the product of watching endless discontinued and frequently retro TV shows. Foxy Foxy by Rob Zombie came on next. Ryden snapped the radio off and parked the Ferrari half a block down the street from Illyrium. I glanced at the club and said something to him I never thought I'd hear myself say. Ryden, have you thought this through? He laughed, and I lost my breath for a moment watching him.
What fun would there be in that?
You do realize we could start a war. He met my gaze and held it.
Don't you think it's time we cut everything loose? See what the hell comes of it?
I narrowed my eyes, not missing his pointed dual message, but not about to address it either. Potential gain?
Nothing has happened in 2 long years, has it? I mean nothing of any real significance. You've changed. The world has changed. But not one bloody meaningful thing has resulted. You pass through this city, touching everything, and nothing touches you. You don't do a single thing that might cataclysmically alter you or the world's course. How bloody sick are you of that?
He was speaking my language. But then, he always had.
We can sit on our hands and wait endlessly, only to find we waited too long and don't like the outcome. Or we can bloody well shape that outcome. Perhaps Mac and Barons need help. Perhaps they need us to create a distraction, be a linchpin, turn things on their head, force the Fey Court's hand. You and me, Danny, we're good at that.
I could taste the danger on my lips as I met his feral, fierce smile with one of my own. Objectives, I said breathlessly.
Ascertain to what degree the Fey have changed, what we're up against. Find out where the bloody hell Mac and Barons are. The Fey are as arrogant as they are immortal. If they have the upper hand, if they've somehow captured Mac and Barons, they won't be able to resist rubbing it in our faces. One simple tell. If they're desperate for your sword, we'll know she's still alive.
I inhaled sharply. This was what I'd been waiting for. Backup. Someone to break the bloody rules with me, because not even I am a formidable enough weapon against an entire race of immortals. Although there'd been many nights I'd nearly convinced myself I was. I'm in like Flynn, I said fervently. He flashed me a slow, sexy smile.
First, tell me something you missed about me.
I rolled my eyes. I told you I didn't think about you.
I never escaped your box, not once.
Not even.
Fine. I'll tell you what I missed about you.
I didn't ask and don't want to know.
I missed the way your mind works. How you're willing to make the difficult decisions few people are willing to face. The ones that cost a piece of your soul. How you suffer no hesitation acting on those decisions, despite their price. And each time you hit breaking point, you come up with a new way to put yourself back together again. How you never stop caring, no matter how badly the world treats you. And bloody hell, this world has treated you abominably. How, despite the war you eternally wage between your brain and your heart, you possess the finest of both intellect and emotion I've ever seen. You dazzle me, Danny O'Malley. You bloody fucking dazzle me. Top or bottom?
His question didn't penetrate at first. I was too distracted by the compliments. He saw my best, the things I was proud of. Flatter my appearance? Not so flattered. I was born in my body. Praise my brain, my spirit? I melt. I've worked hard on them both. Then my face screwed up into a scowl and I nearly exploded, "What?" but swallowed it at the last second. I wasn't issuing Riordan an invitation to continue on that topic. He took it anyway.
Specifically, would you still need to slam down on top of me and vent that endless passion of yours in a hard, savage fuck? Or have you grown up enough that you could sprawl back on my bed and let me give while you do all the taking? Who knows? Maybe you'd even toss me a few pointers while I was at it. Demand what you wanted. I'd like that. Danny O'Malley taking for a change, thinking only about herself.
I was having a hard time getting a breath. Pointers. As if. I'd seen Riordan in action. The man needed no pointers.
We're narrowing it down to just those two at the moment. We'll move on to other positions later. Although I admit to significant interest on the topic of me behind you versus you backed up against a wall with those long, beautiful, powerful legs of yours wrapped around my waist.
Behind. First. I grabbed my sword, shoved my door open, kicked my legs out, and turned back to look at him, using his own words against him from long ago. "Some secrets, kid," I hissed with saccharine venom. "You learn only by participating." He threw his head back and laughed, white teeth flashing, eyes glittering. I closed my eyes, shutting out the vision that had eternally, incessantly escaped my box. Riordan, laughing. That was one of the things I missed the most about him. The rare moments I'd startled him into a laugh, glimpsed unadulterated joy blazing in his eyes. I definitely preferred the top, but that was none of his business. When he stopped laughing, I opened my eyes again.
"Unfortunate,"
he said.
"Of the two, top is my preference as well."
"Stay out of my head." If he'd thought about me so bloody much, he should have culled.
"We'll have to fight for it. See who wins."
An image of Riordan and me, stripped naked, sweat-slicked and lust-driven, battling for dominance, slammed into my brain, stupefying me for a moment. "In your dreams." As I surged from the car, I concentrated on shutting the door, gently. If I slammed it, he'd know how much he'd just gotten to me. The window shattered, glass tinkling to the pavement at my feet. I sighed. Brain-slash-hand disconnect was clearly one of my unwritten rules around him. His laughter, that very laughter I'd missed so much, floated out the broken window into the night. Bright side, I couldn't be more in the mood for war.
21. When they come for me. Cat tucked the blanket snugly around her sleeping daughter, retrieved the worn copy of The Little Engine That Could from the bed, and turned to slip it back on the shelf. As she moved to the door and turned off the lights, she glanced back at Ray, and as it always did, her heart swelled inside her chest with more love than she'd believed a single person could hold. Ray had spent most of the afternoon into the late evening in the gardens, playing with the Spurshee.
I love the Spurshee, Mummy, she'd said before she drifted off. They're not like me. They're so light inside.
Other mothers would have asked the question her comment implied.
If they're light inside, but they're not like you, what does that make you?
She hadn't asked. Time would tell. If Ray believed she was dark for some reason, yet loved as instinctively and freely as she did, there was no point in asking. Using her gift of empathy on her daughter had proved worthless. Ray felt so much love for her mother, Kat could feel nothing beyond it. The spots on Ray's tiny shoulders had vanished. She must have stretched out on something, perhaps laying on two rocks in the grass at just such an odd position. An unnerving freak occurrence, nothing more. When Ray rolled over in her sleep, mumbling inaudibly, Kat's phone tumbled to the floor, and she realized she'd forgotten it on the bed. She reclaimed it, tucked her daughter back in, kissed her forehead lightly, and smoothed her curls. As she turned back for the door, a radioactive cloud of panic, fear, horror, fear, get Ray, run, exploded in her head. A scream escaped her lungs, clawing its way up her throat. She choked on it to keep from frightening Ray. Rooted to the spot by terror, she stood, sputtering softly, trembling from head to toe, staring with wide, horrified eyes.
No, 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 no,
began the desperate litany in her mind.
Please, God, no. I don't deserve this. Ray doesn't deserve this. I'm a good person, a good mother, but I can't protect us from this.
He towered against the door of the bedroom, barring her exit, trapping them within. Enormous black wings curved loosely forward around his body. She knew those wings. She dreaded them. Orgasmed exquisitely, over and over again, wrapped in them.
Breathe, breathe, breathe. You must breathe, she told herself.
But her lungs refused to cooperate. Everything was locked down tighter than the Shisa Do had ever been.
It wasn't possible. He was dead.
Mac had assured them before she left for Fairy that the Unseelie Court had been destroyed, each and every one, including Cruz. Especially Cruz. Kat had asked repeatedly, and Mac had repeatedly told her she could feel all other royalty in existence. Not by location, just a quiet burn in her mind. Cruz wasn't there. Kat had gone so far as to dip into the Fae Queen's heart to ascertain the veracity of her words. Mac believed Cruz dead. But now, standing tall, dark and malevolent, powerful arms crossed, watching her with eyes of, oh dear God, eyes of such finality. She jerked and brushed blood from her cheeks, forced her gaze away, down the thick dark column of his neck, over the writhing, glittering torque, down his black-clad massive body. His shoulders were enormously muscled, his legs powerfully sculpted.
Never hold my gaze, Kat.
He purred softly.
I can protect you from much, but not that. It was not my intention to startle you. I sought you in private, so as not to alarm the others.
She screeched a breath into her lungs that seared them, so desperately was it needed, and angled her body as if she might conceal her daughter from him. Had he come to take Ray away? Both of them? If that was the choice, she'd go. Just don't take my daughter from me, she thought hysterically. Anything but that.
Why are you here?
She whispered faintly.
Oh, lass. It's Sean. He needs you.
What was he talking about? How was Cruz even alive? And what was he doing with Sean? And why was his voice so different than she remembered from those hellish fever dreams?
We've a bit of a problem, Kat. Have you someone to watch the wee lass?
His second use of the word lass finally penetrated a brain of concrete. Kat blinked. A slow comprehension dawned.
Christian?
She exploded softly.
Is that you?
His lips drew back in a silent snarl. Then...
Oh, Christ. Tell me you didn't think I was Cruz. Do I look that bad?
She nodded vehemently. Yes.
Bloody hell,
he growled.
He's dead. I'd know if he was alive. At least I think I would.
She sucked in a ragged breath and crumpled as the strength fled her body, crippled by the profoundly worst moment of her life, thinking Cruz had returned and was going to take Ray away from her. She had nightmares about that happening, awakened horrified and trembling, clutching a hand to her mouth to hold back screams. Christian caught her before she hit the floor, swept her to her feet, and steadied her with an arm about her shoulders. Good God, he was enormous. 7 feet at least. Massive.
Easy, Kat. I didn't mean to frighten you. I thought you knew he was dead.
She didn't believe it. She would never believe it until she saw his lifeless form with her own eyes. Christian's earlier words penetrated at last, and as swiftly as horror had seized her heart, wonder blossomed and happiness flushed her skin. Sean asked for me, she said breathlessly, and made the mistake of glancing up to search his eyes.
Stop doing that,
he growled.
I can't camouflage it, and I bloody well hate wearing sunglasses at night.
He swept a wing around her and swept the blood from her cheeks with the tips of his silken feathers. The sensation was so familiar. She shuddered and cried softly. Stop, I'll get it, kerchief. He backed away, sensing her revulsion.
I've got the Shivajai muted, lass,
he said stiffly.
I'll keep it that way.
As she fumbled about in Ray's chest of drawers, finding, yes, a sock would do, and wiped her eyes, she watched him carefully in the periphery of her vision. He'd turned and was staring down at Ray, then glanced back at her. Her gaze went instinctively to search his eyes again. By the saints, she was going to go blind from blood. She dabbed it on another of her daughter's socks and said faintly, What do you see? He yanked a pair of sunglasses from a pocket, shoved them on, and said,
A lovely wee lass, Kat. Nothing more.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. She's my child. Would you know if she was more? Fuck, she thought. And she never thought that word. But she'd asked the damn question, it was hanging out there, and she waited, breath locked down again for his answer. He said nothing for what seemed to her an interminable time. Finally,
Not necessarily. But what are you saying, lass? Have you some reason to fear she's Cruz's?
No, Kat said on an explosive exhale.
Lie,
he said flatly. Fuck, she thought again. Christian McKelter was as bad as she was. A walking lie detector. Christian sighed, but it turned into a darkly amused laugh.
What a world we live in, eh, Kat? I don't suppose you'd care to tell me that story.
You said Sean needs me? She steered the conversation away from a subject she never discussed, and certainly wouldn't in her daughter's presence, not even while she slept. Some names seemed too powerful to risk uttering. She regretted that his had ever been spoken in her daughter's room. The mere syllable seemed to hold the power of a divine summons.
Aye, Kat. Have you someone to watch over the lass? I need to take you somewhere, just for the night.
She'd suffered such a fright, she felt abject terror at the thought of leaving her daughter. But the Abbey was filled with women who vied for the opportunity to babysit Ray, and heavily warded against... Again, fuck. 3 times in a night. That word. She demanded, How did you get in here without setting off our wards, Christian? He smiled faintly. It was a terrible smile. White teeth. Sharp canines. It brought only more darkness to his eyes.
Oh, lass, I'm not what I used to be. None of the Fae are. You'll be needing new wards. My clan and I can help you with that.
Our Abbey is no longer safe from the Fae, she exclaimed softly, horrified.
Hasn't been for a long time, since shortly after the song was sung.
But we've not had a single Fey intruder, she protested.
They've been busy elsewhere. You're not their current focus. In truth, I doubt they even care you exist anymore.
Why?
You're no threat to us. We've become what we once were. So, what if you can identify us? We'll crush you. I don't mean that personally, but that's how they feel.
Kat drew a deep breath, willing her mind and heart to calm. Then she fired off several rapid texts. Regardless of whether Sean needed her or not, Christian had information, and clearly a great deal of it. They didn't possess and needed to. As well as the ability to help them reward the Abbey. She inclined her head. Where are we going?
Scotland.
She cringed inwardly. You mean to sift me? That meant she had to touch him, and he reminded her far too much of Cruz. He smiled again. That haunted and haunting dark smile.
Sorry, lass. It won't be that easy. We'll need to fly.
Fly? As in, hold on to him for hours?
Try not to radiate abject fucking misery, Kat,
he said tightly.
I'm one of the good guys.
How certain of that are you? She asked warily.
Utterly,
he said with finality.
And it was a bitch of a battle, I'll tell you that.
Unseelie. And one of the good guys. She wanted to believe that.
We should leave before Enyo arrives. She'll have a similar reaction.
She'd deliberately chosen her fiercest warrior to babysit in her absence, and asked Duff and Dekla to be stationed beyond the door. Three women capable of extreme kindness and extreme violence, able to shift between the two in a heartbeat.
I can sift us to the perimeter of the estate, but we'll have to fly from there. Come, lass, and if it helps, close your eyes and think of Sean. He, too, looks like me. You'll need to be prepared for that. Revulsion could push him over to the steep edge he's already perched on, but...
he added softly, as I moved uneasily into the circle of his arms.
You might be surprised by how beautiful you'll find the sky at night. We'll fly above the mist that obscures the terrain, where the moon kisses the tops of clouds. Turning them to silvery puddles, it seems you might dance upon. You'll see the dark, glassy locks, and the grass turn to fine-spun metallic thread. The night creatures are different than those of the day, rarer to see. You might spy great snowy owls soaring, hooting, wolves frolicking as they woo their mates. You may even see a playful wildcat or two.
I realized he was trying to set me at ease, distract me from the intimacy I would have to endure. It worked. As he'd spoken, I heard the truth of the pleasure in his words. He loved to fly at night. He loved the land. And Cruz would never have noticed a single bloody thing on the ground. No bird nor animal. Too power-hungry and driven to see past his own ambitions. I snatched a last quick glance at my daughter, and murmured that I loved her, as footsteps approached beyond my bedroom door. It sounds lovely, Christian, I said, as he drew me to his chest.
It is,
he promised, as we sifted out. Lovely was an inadequate word. Once I got over the sheer terror of being held and flown, and the fear that he might drop me, I was dazzled by the night beneath my toes.
I won't drop you. Quit digging your nails into my shoulders,
he growled. I was counting on that. If he'd wanted me dead, he could have killed me in my room. Eventually I relaxed, still holding tightly to his shoulders, cradled in his arms, distracting myself from the presence of an unseelie prince, by watching the world unfurl beneath us, pondering the blessing his presence implied, the promise The darkness within did not necessarily equate darkness without. I would never be able to read his eyes. One of the easiest ways to take the measure of a person's soul.